with us on a journey into the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable. We will test your senses and challenge your beliefs. A world where science and religion clash. Or do they? You will meet real people and hear real stories, but you will not believe. You will witness strange sights and hear strange sounds, but you will not believe. This is the New England Ghost Project. Welcome to the nightmare.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day to all of you. Welcome to Ghost Chronicles International. I am Ron Kohler, your host, the gatekeeper of the realm of the unknown, unexplained, unbelievable, New England's own Van Helsing. With me, my co-host, the amazing, fantastic god of infrasound, ghost in and ghost in, Steve Carson.
Good evening.
Good evening. So it's going to be a tough night because I'm sitting here with my horse collar on and it's ticking in my ear, driving me nuts.
You still using that old horse collar?
Yep, 260 some odd days now.
Does it work?
4 hours a day, according to the doctor, it does. Bone density is growing. So what the hell do I know?
So do you feel like Mr. Ed?
No. I actually ended up the morning show today. Weirdest thing. I was like on the air and I was going into like 50 minutes in the show. And all of a sudden, I thought I was going to pass out. And so we took a break and I came back. There was only 10 minutes left. So I figured I'd got it out. I only went in like a minute and a half that, and then I had to cancel end the show right there. And then I ended up just laying on the floor. It was bizarre.
You're probably just short of hay, straw.
Yeah, that's what I figure. Yeah. It was weird, though. I mean, the studio was hot. I had a turtleneck and a sweatshirt on, so that could have been it. I don't know. What the hell? Checked my blood pressure. Good.
Did you eat breakfast?
Yeah, a couple pieces of toast, my usual breakfast, couple of pieces of toast or a piece of pie or something, you know, but two toasts, raisin toast is that's what I had. So, nope,
yeah, well, who knows? Yeah,
just getting old, I think, you know?
Yeah, you are getting old. You must be 400 or 500 now?
Yes, at least. So what do you think of our guest last week?
It was an interesting show. I thought he put across some interesting points.
I did like his point of view. I mean, it was good to get different people's point of view, even if you don't agree with them. I mean, that's what the show is all about, to, you know, bring on points of view, have a discussion about them if you can, not to, you know, berate anybody on air. We do that afterwards.
I think we had a good discussion on a number of ranging topics, and I would love to get a flat earther to come onto the show to explain their point of view.
Oh, we can't get one
because it is a different point of view, one that many people may not agree with,
mm-hmm.
And I would like to hear them explain it to me and to explain to the listeners.
And how we keep going on the moon too.
Yeah.
Not just our country, but, you know, other countries now, too. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, the last two fell over, didn't they?
No, the last one.
No, the one before. The
blew up.
There was another one that fell over.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, the Italian one, I think, that fell over.
You know what
it is?
It's those moon kids. They're doing capsule tipping.
They're just running up, giving it a nudge.
Yeah, just like, you know, in the United States, we have this thing called cow tipping where they go out and they push the cows overnight while they're sleeping and they fall down. So it's called cow tipping. So that's what they got the kids up and the moon kids up there capsule tipping.
Well, actually, you can help me because it hasn't appeared on our news today because we're having our what's called budget day where the government tells us how much money they're going to cost us for the next year.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it's nice. Everybody's now talking about that. But I don't know what happened on Super Tuesday.
It was a super boring Tuesday.
Yeah, but who got the vote?
Oh,
the Orange Oracle or the sleepy one?
The Trump got the majority of the vote for the Republicans, as expected. Haley did well. She took, actually took the great Republic of Vermont, which is a surprise. But, you know, I don't know. It's Biden, Trump again, unfortunately. We know not much of a choice, so I don't know. It is what it is.
It's a choice. We don't have a choice. We have a general election this year, but it's not a choice.
So, yeah, you elect your parliamentary people and they elect the prime minister. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, there's something nobody really agrees with, because we've had the same government for 14 years, the equivalent of the Republicans. Mm-hmm. They're called the Conservatives over here. And they, of course, you elect your local representative. They all go off to Parliament and they elect a leader, and that leader becomes, or the leader of the party becomes, the Prime Minister. But there is this objection, because we all voted, or those people who voted in the last general election, because it's become kind of presidential here in the UK. You know, it's personalities above all.
Yeah.
And so everybody voted for Boris Johnson, and he became our prime minister. And then they turned on him. He was got rid of. And then they put in another one, and she was got rid of.
Not very long, it didn't take her to get rid of her.
It didn't take her very long at all. Mm-hmm. And now we've got another one. So they come along and they change all of their policies, but of course nobody's voted for them.
So bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of something that rankles, but they'll be gone. You know, we are definitely headed for a new government here in the UK later this year, and nobody in their right mind would want them. But hey, it's four more years.
Trump actually has a lead in the Biden-Trump election poll, so. Nikki Haley had a higher lead, but Trump does have a lead now, too, because nobody likes anybody.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a Brit. Brits are interesting because we don't really bother about politics. You know, we don't put signs out in our yards, and we don't, you know, we don't have these.
We're missing a big
primaries and all that
business right there.
Yeah, but and when we have an election, you know, probably only about half of the population ever bother to vote. In a major election like the general election, and in smaller elections, regional elections, nobody votes, because we've all realised long, long, long ago that it doesn't make any difference to us who's at the top.
You know what irritates me, I think, more than anybody is, like, you know, I just saw it was an article. If Trump gets elected, people are going to leave the country in droves.
I mean,
it's always been the way, you know, and the other famous saying, not my president. It's like,
not
bullshit.
My president. Well, bullshit. He's your president, you know,
whether you like him or not,
he's
still your president.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, as I say, I'm a Brit. We don't really understand. We don't really engage with politics here in the UK. You might, if you lived in another country, you might get the impression that we do from our media, because they make big of it. They engage in it because that's their job. We don't as a population. You know, we realised, as I say, hundreds of years ago that when it comes down to our levels, nothing ever changes. So we don't engage, but we are constantly.
Is that the song from your one of your groups? Yeah, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah.
That's who was that? Who sang that? Do you remember?
I can't remember it. But the other thing that we get a lot of are the U.S. elections.
The who? That's who it was. All right, carry on.
We get a lot of U.S. elections from our media when they're not talking about our own government, because it's kind of what the media do. And so, you know, there were protests when Trump got elected in the States last time. Was it 2016? There were people marching up and down the streets of small towns in Britain.
Why?
Saying, I don't know. But they were going, oh, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. The sky's going to fall down.
You ain't got no say over it, so suck it up.
Exactly. Personally speaking, I miss Donald because it used to be, you know, we wake up in the morning,
put the coffee on,
read his tweets and see who we'd wound up that. It was fun. You know, and Boris was a bit crazy too, and politics was kind of
actually
fun.
Like Boris, so don't get me wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of fun. Not because it changed anything, but because it was funny to see. Mm. I will raise a glass to Trump on one thing. That he managed to survive 4 years in office and didn't want to start a war.
No, he didn't. No, he did some decent things. But anyway, I don't want to get too much into politics.
Despite, well, I remember sitting out, you know, at the back of VZ, listening to people telling me that, you know, if he'd got elected, you know, that was it. Big red button was going to get pressed and poof, we'd all disappear in a mushroom cloud. And he came and he went and there were 4 years. Well, there were still ongoing wars, but he didn't start a new one. He didn't engage in any, and the way he dealt with Little Rocket Man, I think, was...
Oh, that was too cool. Anyways, we have gone way too much money in politics. Yeah.
That's the politics part of the show, so back to the paranormal.
That was... that was a good...
But it's interesting to see these cultural differences between the two countries.
You
know?
Oh, yeah.
And how the two countries are perceived. You know, it's like... In fact, you came up in conversation over the weekend... Because Kat and I, Mrs. P, were talking about Americans, and how a lot of Americans have a lot of, it happens in the paranormal. There are a lot of American writers and paranormalists who put a great deal of effort into writing about British haunted places.
Oh, true.
And whenever we have, you know, we had a coronation last year, and the media, you know, the experts in the media, in the British royal family, that, you know, they trot out in front of the camera, were all Americans.
Yeah, yeah. We got, you know, you got a lot of fans. I think, you know, we miss our roots. So that's what it is.
It's how we imagine we're perceived, because we always imagine that most Americans think of Brits as kind of like, you know, that we have a butler and that we all eat roast beef and Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been dismissed over the years.
You think?
Yeah, I do, because you have so many shows now that show the other side of it. Although we love the tea thing, that's like a big thing. Every cop show you see, they're gonna let me put the pot on for you. Let me get you a cup of tea. It's like, oh my god.
Oh, that is the one thing that I think has never changed. You know, any disaster, any emergency, war, any difficult situation, a bereavement, the first thing the Brits always do is, shall I put the kettle on?
So it's kind of like a sympathy thing, huh? Or a calming thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's a cultural thing, if anything. But it's you know, we were having this conversation about the differences, and that plays through into the paranormal world too, because, you know, I already said that there are innumerable American ghost writers.
Oh, sure.
Who appear on social media or write for different magazines about British cases.
Say no more. Wink, wink.
As if they, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is, I guess.
Yeah. Fascinating with the, I mean, you have much better, I mean.
Yeah, but it works backwards too, better. Because.
Everything's cool.
Well, it isn't. You come and live here. But, I mean, Dylan's already bailed.
Yeah, but he went to greener pastures.
He was wearing green because he's still Irish now.
The heifer and the other...
Have you noticed that? He was born and bred in Wales. He was always a fiercely patriotic Welshman. And now he's all of a sudden running around dressed as an Irishman.
Yeah, I don't. Well, that's an American thing because St. Patty's Day is coming up.
Yeah.
That's a big deal around here. Yeah, not particularly for anything to do with St.
Patrick's. Is it true in Chicago they dye the river green?
Yeah, they used to. Well, they probably still do. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hey, we
biodegradable.
Not paranormal related, but river related. There is a building in London called the Oxo Tower. Mm-hmm. Are you aware what Oxo is?
Oxo? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. These are small half-inch square stock cubes that you add to flavor meat or
whatever. Oh, okay. All right. Yep.
So you crumble them into, you know.
I thought it was like a detergent or something.
To make a stock.
Yeah.
Well, there is a tower in London called the Oxo Tower. Mm-hmm. And people don't really know why it's so called. And amongst the many, many speculations is one that sounds really, really bizarre. And that is that during World War II, this tower held 50 tons of this powdered beef stock. Hmm. So that when, in the event of an invasion or a threat of invasion, the plan was to release this 50-ton volume of beef stock into the River Thames, where it would turn the water into a muddy brown gravy. Thereby, hang on, I haven't finished yet. Thereby, blinding German U-boats that were trying to enter the Thames estuary to threaten London. Now, you might, now, when I first heard that, I went, that's silly.
That sounds fun.
That sounds like it. But, seriously, it was one of the ideas that was suggested by Winston Churchill's group of, you know, barnstorming, let's come up with crazy, you know, like they invented the Panjandrum. And other devices. Mm. And one of them was, in fact, to fill the Thames with Oxo, with beef stock.
Yeah, I mean, they're really crazy ideas if they don't work, right? So,
well, it was never used.
That's what I mean. So it never got to be tested. So who the hell knows? I mean, you know, when Churchill told everybody to, you know, take every boat they could and go help the boys in Dunkirk, you know, people thought he was crazy then. But they all, you know, they jumped in and did it. I mean,
well, actually that wasn't Churchill. That wasn't Churchill. No.
Well, it came from Churchill.
No, it didn't. It came from
the Navy guy.
It came from an admiral.
Yeah.
And he realized that with 300,000 assorted troops on the beach.
You think he could do that without Churchill? Churchill's in the War Council, so there's no way that he would have done that on his own. He might have brought it up in the War Council as well, but Churchill certainly gave the okay on it.
Well, I mean, on the basis that Churchill probably gave the okay to everything that happened in World War
That's
II.
True,
then, yes. But, you know, there were 300,000, 330,000, and they estimated, the army had estimated that we should try and get 50,000 off the beaches.
Yeah, I know. That was amazing.
And this admiral said, I say, chaps, Let's sequester all the fishing boats, ferries, pleasure craft, steamers, anything that floats, and go over and get our boys back.
Yeah, somebody was thinking out of the box.
And 10 days later, there were nearly 300,000 of them brought back home again. Mm-hmm. So there we are.
So anyways,
stay in the River Thames. Forget doing green. We were going to do it, turn it into beef stock.
Gravy.
Blind.
I love it. Anyways.
Make gravy.
In the Red Light Seance last night, Jim, I guess, is an avid podcast listener, so he came in with this startling new news about this experiment in Canada that they conjured up a ghost during table tipping. And so asked me if I knew about it. So, of course, he's talking about the Philip experiment. But yeah, it's just good. But he also mentioned in this thing that Faraday was a paranormalist as well. Did you were you aware of that?
Well, yes, and in fact, you would have been aware of it if you paid any attention to the lectures I gave during Spirit Quest.
I don't pay any attention to you. You know that.
I know.
So,
but,
yeah.
But it was. Back in 1850-something.
Yeah.
As we've covered before, the specifics, it's the concept. But Faraday was deeply skeptical of the claims that were being made by spiritualists that, that it could tip tables and use that for spirit communication. And so Faraday designed a device that it was a double topped table, effectively. With spring balances that revealed any motion that was applied to the top of the table by those who were resting their hands upon it. And by that measure, very quickly, he deduced, actually, the table was being pushed. Later on, William Crookes and an American chemist, whose name eludes me, Robert Hare, they took the devices further in order to test whether psychic forces emanating from mediums existed by using spring balances that could measure psychic forces. But yeah. Faraday was right up there, right at the front of the queue with his, let's debunk table tipping. And he did.
And we know about
not that it's made any difference. Nobody, made no difference whatsoever.
But anyways, we know that from our trip to the castle, where they used a Faraday cage on.
That was it's called the Faraday cage because he actually discovered the principle of electricity will flow around the surface of an object, not through the middle of an object. And that's why if you're in the middle of a lightning storm, sitting in your car is probably the safest place to be. The car. Because the electricity will always flow around the outside of the vehicle. And unless you're in direct contact with the outside of the vehicle, then you're safe enough on the inside. And that's what a Faraday cage is. And another aspect of the Faraday cage.
And the car is insulated from the ground by its tires.
No, because the tires contain a large proportion of carbon, which makes the rubber black. And it's part of the vulcanization process of rubber. So car tires are actually electrically conductive, although not brilliantly so. But at the voltages concerned with lightning, they are electrically conductive. And that's why.
Yes, but you also have air between it before you get to a metallic.
Well, you don't, because the tire is connected to the wheel. The wheel is connected to an axle.
That's true too. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, there was a big fashion here in the 60s and 70s for cars to have what were called static eliminators on the back, which was like a metal strap that hung from the rear of the car.
I remember that.
And it was designed to reduce motion sickness.
Well, I didn't know. I thought it was to prevent gas tank explosions.
We were always, they were always sold over here as a preventer of motion sickness because
we sold them to prevent gas tank explosions because static electricity would
build up on the tires if you are in the position of requiring rescue from a helicopter or you're in the military and you're about to receive supplies by a helicopter, you will notice that the first thing that hits the ground isn't the supplies, and that the guys on the ground never reach up and touch the cargo or the winch cable. It always has to touch the ground because the rotors themselves generate a huge amount of static electricity, which if you were an unfortunate soldier who suddenly grabbed at the cable, if they're using a wire hawser, you're going to get quite a belt from that. So they have a static dissipation strop.
Yeah, speaking about helicopters, I'll tell you an odd note, it's got nothing to do with nothing, is that some guy is suing. He was a ski lobailer, and he ran into a camouflaged Black Hawk helicopter while ski-mobiling in New Hampshire.
I was unfortunate. Who left the helicopter lying around?
So he's suing the government for not properly marking the camouflaged helicopter.
Well, don't they do them like hunters in the forest? Don't they make them wear yellow baseball orange baseball caps?
It's a camouflaged helicopter, not supposed to be seen.
Hey, I went to Walmart, and I've been to Walmart and Cabela's, and you buy all these camouflage jackets so you can't be seen by the moose or the deer or whatever else you're out hunting, and then you wear a bright orange patch and a bright orange baseball cap.
But they're not trying to camouflage themselves from mooses. They're trying to camouflage themselves from people.
Well, maybe if the Black Hawk helicopter was wearing an orange baseball cap or it had orange patches sewn on the side of it, it wouldn't have been run over by a snowmobiler.
Oh, maybe it was those black helicopters that conspiracy theorists always talk about, you know, Men in Black, the black helicopters. Big thing.
Well, the black helicopters exist.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got a minute. Brought to us by?
Yes. You'll listen to Ghost Chronicles International right here on TojiNet Radio, where we carry a variety of topics to speak about. We do. Anyways, we're brought to you by Circles of Wisdom, 286 Merrimack Street, Methuen, Massachusetts, the Glant Messier Family Law Group, 15 High Street, not the Andover, Massachusetts, and the wonderful friends on Ghost Chronicles Radio on Patreon, who help bring you these lovely shows. So we thank our fellow Patreon subscribers, and you can join and get access to exclusive material that they can only get to, and I think it's like $3 a month or something. So thank you for those people who, like John in the chat, who have joined us. So, all right, we'll be right back after the following breaks right here on TojiNet Radio.
With a cutting edge.
Welcome to TogiNet, radio with a cutting edge.
Do you have a paranormal event, book, or something else you want people to know about? Then why not advertise it on Ghost Chronicles Radio? With over 150,000 downloads a month, get your message out to an audience that's interested in the subject. We have a plan at a cost that fits your needs. For more information, contact Ron Kolick at anyghostproject@comcast.net or call 978-455-6678.
Located in Illinois, there lies a sleepy little town where nothing is a common occurrence.
You going to that party in town tonight?
Heck yeah! I only turned 18 once.
That is until the night of celebration.
Where the hell is she? Oh, no. No, 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 Jessica!
What's happening?
From the creators of Shadowhunters, Bite Me, comes a tale of primal terror. Grindcore mayhem. Shadowhunters, kill Jessica, kill!
Oh.
part two of the first part of the East Coast Chronicles International.
Yeah, you know, that's the only one that matters, right?
Yeah, you're listening to it, and it's me and him, so yeah. And hey, I got asked today to try and define a Class A EVP.
What do you mean define a Class A EVP?
Well,
it's already been defined.
Well, I know, but I was asked to try and define it succinctly and shortly, and I said a Class A EVP is one that you've got, but the other group haven't.
Cute. Very cute. Is that a paranormal joke? I'm not sure.
No, it was a reality event that happened earlier today. But having raised it, I did then clarify that the classification system was instituted by Konstantin Raudiva after World War II to classify the types of electronic voice phenomena, EVPs, that were being recorded. Mm-hmm. And the Class A was... By his definition, the classification system referred to the audibility and the intelligibility of the communication. And Class A was akin to a normal telephone conversation. So that's
a good way of putting it. That's very concise and very,
And there were I think the classification went ABC. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's now been changed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the modern classification system is Class A is anything above something resembling a fart. or an EVP that your group got that the other group didn't get.
There you go. I don't know, but whatever.
I just thought I'd, you know, I mean, it happened earlier today whilst I, you know.
You know.
Busy writing.
You know. Cal's got his new... revise telephone calls from the dead. Either they sold it already or is it back?
Don't know. I'm a bit cross with Cal if the truth be known and if he's listening.
Uh-oh.
Because I've sent him several messages saying that we really need to catch up regarding Paravision because I've rapidly reaching the point of I've done everything I need. Well, yeah. Everything I'm supposed to do, but I'm not sure which bits he want me to do any extra bits. But he seems to have gone to ground. Oh. He's hiding from me.
Doing the Karen thing.
You mean the Karen and Dylan thing?
Dylan. Dylan's never going on the ground. He's all over Facebook like a pimples and a teenager.
Do you know, I think the last time I saw Dylan was, it was in New England. He's been very, very difficult to get hold of.
Oh, he's a busy man.
Busy man. Well, not just that, you know, he's got a lot going on. He's got his PhD and, you know, he's got a new life and it looks, you know, I'm very happy for him.
It looks like he's going to be happy. I mean, it seems like it. This is all new. So it's new country, new woman, new job. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. Did I mention that I did an interview for his stupid PhD thing?
No, you didn't.
Yeah. He called me and, I did a 40-minute interview for this PhD thing he was doing.
Ah.
So.
He's never asked me.
Well,
it's
probably these American groups, you know, they how they associate the press, I mean, to the TV shows and stuff or something. That's what it was about.
I think that's how I'm
affected by it versus, you know, that's what his whole thing is about.
Well, I mean,
so it wasn't slighting you, Steve. He was just
too good to do it. Well, I think he knows my perspective on it anyway. But it brings us back to that cultural thing we were talking about before regarding politics. Because whilst we have impressions of America, and Americans have impressions of Brits. That does kind of play into the paranormal, because we started off with Most Haunted in 2002. And that showed quite a British way of doing things. And that was picked up and that was copied and emulated.
Oh God, was it ever copied?
Exactly. And we, I mean, I remember there was a group called, wasn't the East Bridgewater's Most Haunted?
Yeah, the Hands Group, East Bridgewater Most Haunted.
Yeah.
There was a lot of
and
them.
So, but then along came, you know, the American response in the form of Ghost Hunters and their more proactive ways of doing things. You know, this more challenging, more in-your-face way that they used. More technology based. And quite quickly, the British group started to adapt. And indeed, Most Haunted itself started to change to reflect that more American approach. When Zach came along with his very confrontational style of investigating. You know, we saw a huge change here in the UK in the way that groups approach the subject. It used to be, you know, considered to be frowned upon if you were disrespectful to spirits. And there are still many who take that line that you shouldn't be disrespectful to spirits. You should always
swear at them.
And then you've got, and Zach started, you know, challenging them. And then you saw many, many groups here in the UK starting to challenge the spirits and become active demon hunters, you know. And the nature of the spirits also changed. You know, Britain has a long tradition of ghosts going way back hundreds and hundreds of years, and they were always fairly boring. You know, ghosts are... they were dead people. They were just one. Do you remember the story of the Canterville ghost? You know, it was just a boring, it was kind of like the ghost from Harry Potter. It just wandered the corridor with its arms tucked under its head, never did any harm to anybody. You know, occasionally scared somebody, but just went about the business of being a ghost. That was British ghosting for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And British ghost hunters used to sit in armchairs or sit at the bottom of stairs or sit up in bed and wait for the ghost to appear. And that was British ghost hunting.
Yeah.
But now it's you know, I don't think I've heard a report of a traditional British ghost in many a long year. Demons, malevolent spirits, threatening people, getting scratched, bitten, punched, assaulted by poltergeists are all the rage over here.
Yeah.
And I wonder what happened to the poor traditional British ghost with its head tucked under
its arm. I probably went on vacation. I said, oh, the hell with this. Let's go.
Well, I mean,
no one's paying attention to me anymore. I'm going.
I mean, have you seen the British comedy series Ghosts?
Yeah,
yeah. There is an American equivalent, which is the same script, but they've changed some of the characters to reflect American history.
Yeah,
and these are your archetypal British historical ghosts. You've got the guy with his head. Well, he never manages to keep it under his arm because he keeps losing it. He keeps leaving it on the floor. And you've got, you know, period historical characters from different periods, and they bumble around and, you know, get into mischief. And that is the British idea of what a ghost is.
Yeah.
These ideas.
You have a caveman, we have a Viking, you have a...
Yeah, I've watched the American one. It kind of, you know, it's... Bizarrely, it's exactly the same script.
Oh, you know, okay, that's funny because I remember you telling him, I said, yeah, we have it. And you said, oh, I saw it. I didn't like it. But then, you know, I watched yours and I didn't like it because I had seen the American one first. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, I can see how this would affect your point of view one way or the other. I mean, some of the things are definitely cultural distance.
Oh, yeah. Different. I mean, yeah. that's... because a lot of the humour in the British one played into the British, you know, history and humour. And the cult, you know, there is a cultural difference. Mm-hmm. Whereas the American one would have resonated with the American audience, and that's what made it ultimately successful in America.
Yeah.
You know, because there were a lot of historical jokes in it that I guess a lot of Americans may not have picked up on.
Yeah.
In the British version. And likewise, the American version didn't resonate as well with the Brits because it's not our history, it's your history.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, because you have the prime minister with has no pants on, and we've got, of course, the hotshot businessman with no pants on. So, I mean, it's, you know, we got our cultural thingies. And
Yeah. And it was brilliantly, unfortunately, it ended now. The final episode in the UK was aired last year, and it was one time where they actually brought it to a good ending.
Oh, really?
You know, it's a really, I'm not going to spoil it because the American one is using the same script, so it would be a spoiler. But it's a good ending.
That's the American one. Does really
it ties up. Well, the British version ties up all the loose ends right at the end of the series, and it worked out really well. But we're all looking forward now to, of course, Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Hey, the British one, they don't get sucked off, do they?
No. Well, one or two do.
Oh, they do?
And they do refer to it as being sucked off. Because
do they? Fun. That was so funny the first time I heard that. It's like, oh, my God. But anyway.
Well, the first one it happened to was actually one of the female characters, the witch.
Our hippie went first.
We lost the witch because, well, she wasn't a witch. She was just accidentally burned at the stake.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. She used to go paranoid over mention of fire and stuff like that. And the other guy used to tell her about it.
And always smelled of smoke.
Yeah. We had the lady of the house husband returned from hell, which was interesting.
Ah, well, I don't recall that in ours. So maybe there are differences.
There are differences.
I've never seen all of the American episodes, but the ones
I haven't seen all the British either.
The early first series of both I've seen, and they were using the same script. So presumably either they've modified the script or maybe the American series, you know, varies, changes.
Yeah.
I mean, there were things that were missing. You know, there was right at the start of the first series, before or after the accident in which the person became able to see the ghosts, there was the ghost pigeon.
Yeah, that was funny. I saw that. That was a riot.
But it made one appearance in series two, and it was never mentioned again. Mm-hmm. And it was such a brilliant little segue, you know, just this little moment where the pigeon would suddenly, you know, it was kind of like crazy and funny, but they didn't use it anymore after series two, and we're all going, "Where's the pigeon?"
Mm-hmm.
I guess it flew away.
Yeah, I enjoy both of them. Like I said, when I first saw the British one, I said, "Oh, this isn't as good. I like our characters better than everything." And then, you know, I soon realized that it was a cultural thing. So it was still funny. You just have to think in a different mindset than we were used to with our original series, because that's, you know, they set you up because you've watched the original series, not the original American series. And so you're used to certain things, and then you switch over. And it's like, oh, look at, they changed that, which they really didn't, since you were there first. But it's cultural. So once you get the cultural references and stuff, it is very, very good. I enjoyed it as well. So anyway,
what do you think will happen with the new Ghostbusters movie then?
I'm going to go see it, so I think it's going to be
I'm definitely going to go see it. I mean, it's got all of the characters, except one, obviously.
We got it coming this month.
But we've got, March 22nd, I think, for us.
Yeah. So it's a worldwide release, huh?
Yeah. But I see Slime is back.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, Janine is back on the telephones.
And Murray's back.
Yep. The surviving main characters are all back.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder, you know, I mean, there's part of me, I know Dylan's a huge fan of Ghostbusters, but I kind of hope that they'll stop now.
Pretty sure here. Yeah.
You know,
well, I don't know. They're still bringing the kids back too. So it'll
I know, but you know, at the moment, moment, you know, it's kind of worrying me a little bit. There is this sort of thought there was that temporary disaster in 2016. That really didn't work. Although it was funny. It's a funny film in its own right.
And
it's got some fantastically funny comedy moments in it.
It's disjointed.
But it kind of, yeah, it didn't work. But as a standalone comedy, it is funny. Mm-hmm. They pulled off a masterpiece with the last follow-up, the third movie.
The new Ghostbusters.
Yeah. It was an absolute masterpiece. You know, they tied up so many ends and they brought in so much stuff.
Yeah.
And the ending of it, you know, it was superb. And there is a thread left that they can carry forward.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you know, how many Halloween movies, how many, you know, Superman movies, how many Marvel?
You know, I don't know. We got 16, 17, and so on.
How many Star Trek, movies?
Yeah.
You know, at some point, it starts to lose the magic. And I'm hoping that they don't drag it on forever as a franchise to that point.
The funny part
because
about
I know
it,
a lot of Star Wars fans who now won't watch Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars going downhill. Rogue One was the last really good one. But anyways, if you notice,
what do our listeners think?
Yeah, they'll always let us know. But if you look at the original Ghostbusters one, right?
Yeah.
It's just what it was. It was Ghostbusters. They were there to save the day, to get rid of the ghosts, right? To capture them and put them in purgatory or wherever they're going, right? And so when all these other reality shows came out, there was nobody doing that. They were just running around. And then next thing you know, people are even trying to do that stuff because they realize that was so cool. And that's what really made Ghostbusters the good thing, is that it was a battle of the good and evil. And they try to do that, I think, in ghost hunting and paranormal investigating nowadays. They try to make it a battle of good and evil. And it's really not that.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It really should be research.
Well, they didn't in the movie because it was a comedy movie.
It was an entertaining movie.
But what they did do was that was really the very first portrayal of technology being used, if you discount poltergeist. But if you have this idea that there were ghost detecting devices, and that was first portrayed in Ghostbusters, the PKE meters and the other things that they could, the ghost trap. There was an emotion meter that was used in Ghostbusters 2 to measure the emotion levels so that they could control the slime, the pink slime, the ooze.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And you know, this idea of the application of technology, really, you could point a finger straight at Ghostbusters to say that's where it began.
Although I have to kind of disagree, because we had the early people that were doing paranormal devices.
Saying that technology wasn't being employed. I mean, Price was using it 70 years earlier. But
yeah, exactly.
The idea that, you know, there were dedicated ghost hunting devices
Yeah. So okay.
So the PKE meter, Price was measuring temperature and humidity and taking photographs, but the PKE meter was the very first dedicated paranormal detection tool. And that's emulated then with the K2 meter, which was the next, and subsequent, you know, all of the new generation and iterations of these electronic devices for detecting the presence of the paranormal, right down to the DesTech ball.
They had we tried to get them on the group, but I mean on the show, but we couldn't. There was a group around Boston area that invented this, basically a ghost trap.
I remember talking about them.
Yeah, big chamber, and you know, I they disappeared. I couldn't find them, but they were like, oh, okay, they brought people in, and
yeah, it was a few years ago we discussed that on the show.
Yeah,
but I mean, they also tried that with the, you know, I mean, that the idea of trapping
the wraith hunters was, there with their mini devices, but, the devil's box, and all that crap.
Yeah, but I mean, they're only emulating real life because, or movies, because think back to, was it the Entity case? Which was based upon a real case that took place in California,
mm-hmm.
where they, you know, at the end of the movie, they tried to trap the Entity in a laboratory by using, was it dry ice and...
God, liquid, I forgot about that. It wasn't liquid nitrogen, by the way.
But they did, didn't they? They tried to draw it into the laboratory where they tried to freeze it with liquid nitrogen or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there is your earliest portrayal of, you know, but I mean, even in the Middle Ages, here in Wales where I live, the local bridge in the town is supposed to have a ghost buried beneath it because there were dedicated men called ghost layers.
Yeah.
And they would go from haunted house to haunted house, and they would persuade the ghost or conjure the ghost or order the ghost to get inside a glass bottle or a jar.
Yeah.
And then they would screw the lid on, and they would fling it in because, according to the
legend,
folklore, the legend, that the ghost could never get out once it was laid under running water. Yeah. So they would fling it into or bury it under the footings of a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a number of these ghost bottles found over the years, along with, you know, assorted witch bottles. Because
did the ghosts come out of them?
I don't know if anybody's ever been brave enough to open one.
Oh, interesting. But if you look at the early ghost hunters, like, Price and some of the other ones too, is their devices were always invented to investigate the possible causes of paranormal activity, like you mentioned, temperature and other things, as well as to capture in some instances.
Price and his ilk, or Faraday with his tipping table.
Yep.
They never created or said that the device was measuring anything paranormal. What they were looking at is what physical phenomena could be measured.
So
temperature. Would the temperature really change? You know, when people said the room went icy cold, could the spirits or the medium actually cause those things to move?
Would it actually leave footprints?
Would it actually leave footprints in the chalk powder that was placed on the floor? Could it move an object with a chalk circle drawn around it? And by how much could it move it by? So all of those were measuring physical phenomena because that's all that they could measure and they realistically knew. But they weren't saying we're measuring anything paranormal because they knew you can't measure something that you don't know what it is.
Right. What I was trying to get is they were trying to measure the possible explanations for the paranormal. Yes. What's the, you know, if there, it occurs, then yeah, okay, whatever.
And this goes directly back to that group in Boston with their ghost trap, because if you're going to build a trap for anything, first of all, you've got to know what it is you're trapping, because mm-hmm. if you want to trap a moose, then you've got to know how big the moose is, how strong the moose is.
Oh, sure.
You know, you can't just, oh, we're going to build a trap.
Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, you don't know what it is, what you're trapping.
Yeah. So and the if other you're going to build is, a trap, that you are implying that you already know what it is that you're going to trap.
And the other thing with all modern lecture, almost out of here. With all modern stuff, it's, you know, it has to have, pretty lights on it. It's like, you know, what is the use of these lights? What is the purpose of these lights? You know,
so you can see them in the dark primarily. And so it looks good.
No, I mean, this ghost trap was in a laboratory, and yet it was lit up like a Christmas tree with all these fluorescent lights and green and different colored lights that gave it an aurora about it. You know what I mean? It just gave you, make it look like it was cool. That's all.
Well, that was like the same reason they put those lights inside astronauts' helmets in space movies. To light up the astronaut's face, of course, and to make it look cool.
Yeah, because it's a movie. We don't know who they are.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a real NASA astronaut or a SpaceX astronaut, and he doesn't have his, illumination on the inside of his helmet. Never mind. No. We'll talk about it another day.
Yeah, another time, another day. Well, anyways, thanks for staying here, if you're still here with us. And
there's nobody left. They left hours ago.
I'm sure. Anyways, we had a good chat. That's all that matters. Anyways, you've been listening to Ghost Chronicles International right here on TojiNet Radio, brought to you by Circles of Wisdom, 286 Merrimack Street, Methuen, Massachusetts, the Glant Messier Family Law Group, 15 High Street, North Andover, Massachusetts, and our very good friends on Ghost Chronicles Radio and Patreon. Become a member today. Go to Patreon, put Ghost Chronicles Radio in, sign up, get access to lots of cool stuff. So good night, everyone. God bless. And oh, by the way, next week is Daylight Savings Time.
Cool. I get an early night. Good night.
It's a late night, isn't it?
No, it's early for me. 4 hours, not five.
Is it? We spring ahead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, spring forward, fall back.
Yeah, you're a lucky guy, you.
Ghoulies to ghosties, long-leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.